Whoa. All right.
lights out. I'm off the board like a wipeout. Close both eyes and keep shining like a lighthouse. Darker than the White House. Money roll right route. Play it off the wall, Mike Trout. Ladies want my energy, a spark, and they loving it. Then they can't find me like the Ark of the Covenant. I'm miles of blood and shit. You ain't even catching, must be wearing rubber mitts. Weak party, I'ma bubble it. Came on the mothership with bottles and bags. Sit back and watch them trip off these models and rags. Versace, Gucci, Louis and Prada. We advertise for y'all and we still get nada. J-Roll bars are very, you just arbitrary. Head full of whack lines like the bar was scary. Hold up, have we met before? Not unless you rep the four elements that I'm repping for. Where's your top rock? Where's your feelings? Where's your triple threat? Hand to the ceilings. Keep them there. 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 Giraffe status, passion addicts, jazz in Dallas. Smack my girl on the ass with my callus. Rough-handed, that's what she demanded. Left it up in the air until the flight landed. Layover, scooped in a Gray Rover. Your end is near like auto-tune, you better pray to Hover. J-Ro, I'm in the house like an ankle bracelet. Wasted, face it, I'm deeper than a flooded basement. My language for the leaders like Leviticus. Look what they did to us. This is ridiculous. I'm too meticulous. I rock well. I'm so sick with this. Hotter than Sun Valley. Liquid run Cali. Life's a gamble. Axe Valley. Survivor of the galleys. Everybody talking about saving refugees till they start crossing the seas. Then they be like, keep them near. 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 Keep them near.
Thanks.
What? We are legendary. No one can stop this flow. We are legendary. No one can make no fuss. We are legendary. No boy can stop this growth. We are legendary. Original musician with the crown. Yeah.
No disrespect to Will Smith, but yo, I am legend. Preaching the hostile gospel, you can call me Reverend. Leading the congregation and building with my brethren. Let me give you my resume. Hold up, this may take a second. Put on by Uncle Jam's BRE Westman. First nigga from the left, co-sign a Def Jam. Then move to Atlantic, they can't stop me. Jam Master Jamerson, name LA Posse. First DJ Bobcat, next one DJ Cool. First collab with King T, just planning what it do. You miss that G shit with that East Coast spit. What you get? You get the licks, baby. You get the licks.
That's the name of my crew, and we legendary. You beat us in the month of never wary. Levels of clever, bury a virus on papyrus. Getting heavy like your eyelids. You want less than minus. Trouble riders all behind.
We need more of this. Live it like a porpoise. Stay a rap on purpose. It's a dope MC shortage. You here to replenish. All in your face without a blemish. You taking out your own homies like a scrimmage. I build tiny homes. Can't outrhyme me, homes. This tenth line I'm on. In your head like a xylophone. Feel a shop boy, family tree, amicably giving you what you need, baby.
We are legendary. No one can stop this flow. We are legendary. No one can make no fuss. We are legendary. No one can stop this flow. We are legendary.
Okay, hey. Let me pause that. Let me pause that for a second. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
What's poppin'?
Got some jams going here.
That baby is just, oh my gosh, like a little baby doll.
Yeah, she's that's little Mila.
Absolutely gorgeous.
Make her appearance.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you.
One now, right? Yeah.
She's nine months.
Okay, 9 months. I done pushed it.
You be celebrating every month.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's right. I love it. I catch you guys on Facebook. You know, it's supposed to be a mukbang, but every rap artist I've had on here so far has not joined me in a meal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it's okay.
Oh, you know. Cool. We had dinner a little earlier.
That's cool.
Before we got the news.
The news. Oh, my gosh. Well, let's look. Okay, so when did you do Legendary? When did you do Keep Them There? When did you do Sober Master?
Legendary, we did when was that, about a year and a half ago? We shot the video for it out in LA. Just came about because my man Master C, he had this track that he was playing me, right? And I think it was like a sample from Funky Worm or something. And I was like, come on, man. Like, it's a nice track, but how many times we gonna use Funky Worm, you know?
West Coast
it's a West Coast staple. I love it, you know, but I was like, let's do something. So he went home that night and came with that beat. He said he found it on some old record that was from out of the country somewhere. Oh. So, and he came with that track, and it was like, whoa, that's the one. So Breeze hopped on it. He gave me the alley-oop, and we just did some Legendary music.
I love your voice, man. It's very, very unique. It's very smooth. It's smooth, but it's hard, if that makes any sense. I don't know if you remember how long we've actually known each other, brother. Like, we've known each other since the Coolio days, like back in the 90s. I don't know if you know that. I don't know if you know. But because I used to see all around all the time.
Right.
You and E. Swift and Tash. And I was with Coolio. And Dub C, he was my manager, like from 94.
Okay, yeah.
98. Yeah. We've done videos together, you and your crew and me, with Coolio.
Right.
95. I just been around, man.
Man, rest in peace of my bro Coolio, man. He was a legend in his own right. I met Coolio back in like 1986.
Get out of here.
Yeah. I'll never forget. Cause I come from a city called Pacoima, right outside of LA.
Mm-hmm.
North in the valley, you know. And we used to do parties all over. Scotty D was the man that connected all of us up. Coolio, us, King T, Bobcat, DJ Pooh, we all got connected through a man named Scotty D, if y'all don't know who that is. But we're doing a party out in Pacoima, and house party, backyard boogie. And Coolio, that's the first time I met Coolio.
Mm.
Came out and he was down with the Soundmaster crew. Which was a crew. One of the guys used to come out from the Bronx named DJ D.
Okay.
A DJ from Soundmaster crew in the Bronx. You can hear KRS-One mention them. What's his name? Just Ice, Soundmaster crew. Yeah, from that song Going Way Back, he mentions Soundmaster crew. So we are members of the Soundmaster crew because Coolio was a member of the Compton chapter of the Soundmaster crew, and DJ D used to come out, bring us breakbeat records before anybody knew what breakbeat records were. It's a long story behind that, but I'm gonna stay on this story with Coolio.
That's fascinating though.
But I remember we was packing the records up because I was the guy who was like carrying crates, you know. People used to carry crates. DJ used to come with like 10 crates, but it would be always somebody helping them carry the crates. Right. I was that guy. So I'm helping carry the crates back to the van, and Coolio just busted this rap. And I'll tell you, most people don't know this. He was one of the dopest, most feared MCs in all of Los Angeles at this time. I'm talking about 86.
Was he Coolio then?
His name was Coolio.
Wow.
I even know how he got his name, Coolio.
Okay, how? Because I remember that story, but how?
Well, I'll go first with the story that he liked to tell because he was a Leo.
Oh my gosh.
So a cool Leo.
Got you.
But some of the homies used to call him Coolio Iglesias. Because he was dressed real sharp at the time. And they was like, you looking like Coolio Iglesias, boy.
Hey there, yeah. Jay. How you doing?
That's the story I got. So, other than that, it was like cold raps, man. I was like, I didn't even rap after he bust that rap. Because I'll never forget, it was called Don't Get Me Started. Don't get me started. He just kept saying that. And I was like, that was dope. Because I was rapping at the time, too. But I was like, I ain't even going to say nothing after that.
That's crazy. That's beautiful that they had, like, spaces for everybody to be creative like that around L.A., you know? Most people don't really know the history of, I would call it underground hip-hop in the 80s. People don't really know that history, you know? That's why I want to also have DJ Cool, oh, my God, Schoolie D. Wait, oh, my God.
Spoon. Okay.
I'll get back to it. I can't think of his name right now, but he's one of the old school OG joint brothers, and I'll figure that out. But
Joe Cooley or who?
Yeah, there we go. Joe Cooley. Thank you. I want to have him on the show and break all that down as well. Like, that's really interesting because you know
the thing, the hip hop was a hood thing at the time. You know, only time you saw hip hop was
Ice-T
in the ghetto, like backyard parties or down at the mall. Somebody might have brought some cardboard to do some backspins or something, or house parties. People was DJing. There was no hip hop in the clubs. There was no hip hop on the radio or TV. There was nothing in media at all during this time. And I'm talking about like pre-86, like 83, 82, 83, 84. It was all just in the neighborhoods, you know.
Before K-Day, huh?
Yeah, just before K-Day, and K-Day actually was the first one. I remember KGFJ used to play rap music, and K-Day came as first all hip hop.
Now, did you work with K-Day a lot in the beginning, since you were already on the scene a little bit?
Yeah, well, when King T made his first record, we went up to K-Day up on the hill and met Greg Mac. That was like,
Greg,
never forget that. You know, we sitting in this room with Greg Mac, and DJ Pooh gave him the record. He started playing it, and yeah, it was a monumentous occasion.
That sounds amazing. Is that music still around? You have any of those old tapes?
I wish I did. That's the thing. They was on cassettes. Cassettes pop. You know, they don't last like wax and all that.
That's so unfortunate. That's some gems right there.
Yeah.
You mentioned King T, man. I've been on a diatribe about King T a couple of times because I heard Biggie in this interview say he was totally inspired by King T. And I went and listened to some old King T and I was like, dang, I thought it was Biggie. That's what I was telling Coolio. I was like, I thought it was Biggie, yo. Right. So another part of this whole reasoning for doing this historical Legends West Coast shout out, what's up, everybody, by the way, we just dived all in, is because of the fact that, you know, I've noticed shows, no diss to like the Drink Champs or anything, but it doesn't seem like they really respect the West Coast artists enough. You know, even though quiet is kept. They've been a lot of inspiration has come from West Coast artists. You know, there used to be a running joke, I think, some rappers from the East Coast kind of like used to kind of disrespect the lyrical aspect of West Coast rappers, you know, in general. And definitely that's not fair. And by the way, folks, the Alcoholics, they have worked with Pharrell. Okay. I love that.
We worked with a lot of people from the Diamond D to Busta Rhymes.
Oh my gosh.
DJ Scratch, you know, Q-Tip, a lot of people from the East Coast. They always respected what we did. And that started from, of course, King T. He was getting played on the radio out there. Marley Marl and them was spinning his records like real hard.
Hence the inspiration.
Yeah, so they always respected him. And then when we came out as his crew, we already had the green light from the East Coast. And you know, I always say, like Lauryn Hill say, the East is the seed. You know what I mean? They started it. So we always got to respect that, you know, regardless of if people want to give us our credit or not, it started from there and that can never change. You know what I'm saying? That can never really change. So hip hop, as we know, it started there. I have a few arguments. Some people have arguments that hip hop actually started on the West because we was locking in the 60s.
I mean, Rerun and what's the other brothers? You know, the popping, they used to do it on What's Happening and the Gong Show. Yeah,
all that started. I mean, Soul Train, a lot of the moves they was doing on the East Coast started because they was watching Soul Train. And a lot of the first B-boys and stuff would tell you that. But I always say hip hop as we know it started in New York. We know it.
The rapping aspect of it, though.
Hip hop, you know, my auntie was a locker. You know, she didn't know she was doing hip hop at the time. You know, so, when I first heard Biggie, I heard it immediately. I was like, he sound like my bro. You know, and when we went on tour with him, he told us that. He said, man, all I used to listen to was King T. Biggie told us out of his mouth. Puffy told us years later, even.
Damn. That's incredible. That's incredible. I had never really heard that until I had watched some clip and Biggie gave it up.
Wow.
I want to find that clip. I really do. I know it's not, it's important, but it's not important, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, I really have come to really have the honor of getting to know a lot of the rap artists on the West Coast, a lot of them, in general, you know, and I'm so impressed with just all the incredible creativity that came from all these little pockets of little crews, you know. A lot of them started as dancers. Then they evolved into rappers, and me too. I evolved from like poetry into doing more so as like a blend of spoken word and rap, you know. Right. That Good Life, man, that was a place I definitely honed my skills. I used to go up there with Ski-Lo, like that's how I came up in there.
Oh,
like,
wow. Ski-Lo.
Yeah, we were like cousins, man. We were like play cousins. And every week we would get together and try to have the next song for the next Thursday. And I always forgot my part. it would never fail. And speaking of tapes, when we moved to Las Vegas, Dino, shout out Volume 10.
Volume 10.
Cleaning up. And he threw that tape away. The only tape I have of me and Ski-Lo performing at the Good Life. I'm like, oh my God, I hope somebody out there may have it. But it is what it is. Shout out Ski-Lo.
Yeah. First time I saw Ski-Lo was at a, what do they used to call these things? Showcase.
Oh, okay.
He was at a showcase out in the valley. And I remember he did that song. He did, I wish. I wish. And after the, you know, because, you know, we were out already. So we was like, I was invited to come down, check out the new talent, whatever. When he got off stage, I was like, that's a hit, bro. You need to do something with that, you know, like for real. Like I was loving it already, man. It just sounded like a hit. I never seen this dude before in my life or nothing. He was up there. I wish I was a little bit taller. I was like, oh, that's it right there, you know.
I got a story behind that song. So he used to do this one song. I don't know if you've ever heard it, like Big Mac with some cheese, quarter pound. He just do the whole, it was like a joke. He used to do that at the Good Life. And then he was practicing that I Wish song, but he didn't do that with that track yet. Do you know he made that track for me?
Oh, wow.
And then his label liked it, and he snatched that real quick. Like Nev Love, shout out Nev from the Five Footers.
Me
and she wrote we wrote a hook to it. And next thing you know, he was like, I'm about to use that track.
Let me tell you something, you know, and history was made.
I'm happy for him, man. And I also noticed, you know, a lot of influence, dare I say, Eminem. I love Eminem. I think he's very extremely talented. When I first heard Eminem, I heard Ski-Lo. I heard CBE, you know, shout out CBE. I think I'm interviewing them tomorrow. Riddler, Fish, Volume 10, like this whole little, the Good Life. But also another reason I wanted to start this interview session is because there are so many amazing, talented artists. And I started just kind of playing music for my students. I have middle school, high school age students, and they have little to no knowledge about music past a certain time. And I just feel it's important that they understand how much incredible, you know, skill is out there, what hip hop really, really is, you know what I mean? So I appreciate you coming on here, J-Ro.
Thank you.
So impressed with you guys. I remember they used to, I don't know if you knew this, but y'all was considered like the light skinned, whatever. Right? It's all three of y'all some peanut butter colored brothers. You know? Back then, I don't know if they even tried to take you seriously at first until they actually, you come out rocking the tracks and then y'all just had swag and lyrics. It's just like, knock it off. It's undeniable, you know? And then what was that brother's name? He's a teacher too. I don't know if he's teaching now, but. What's his name?
Defari.
Yeah.
He was doing it, man. He's working behind the scenes in Hollywood now, you know.
Okay.
Doing his thing, got a beautiful family.
Dope.
Yeah, he's a man of God. You know, he really I won't say turned his life around. He wasn't like a bad guy or nothing like that, but you know, he really he's a very impressive guy, you know. Hmm. Big up to Defari.
Well, like minds, right?
Absolutely. Like,
somebody asked me, I want to ask this question. They had a question for you. Was it true? Did you live in Europe for a while?
Yeah. I lived in Sweden for 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So I moved out there in 2003. I got up out of here. I was like, things ain't going right with the music, you know, something happened. You know, I don't know, you probably heard about this meeting about the prison systems and somebody had a meeting. They had a big meeting and I knew about it, but I wasn't allowed to say anything at the time.
Wow.
So if you go back to 2002, 2003, hip hop just disappeared, you know.
Well, now that you mention it.
And they did it right under our noses, you know. Yo MTV Raps went away. Rap City went away. Teen Summit, you know, all these positive things for urban youth disappeared.
Yeah.
You're not hearing KRS-One. Public Enemy doing interviews on the radio no more, because there was a list of artists that were banned from commercial radio, and we was one of them. And it was all hip hop. So, you know, you hear what came out after 2003, 2004, and the 2000s. It was totally different. And it was like all these artists from the 90s stopped making records or what? What happened?
I remember 50 Cent came out around that time, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Lil Jon, Yin Yang Twins.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of stuff started coming out and a lot of stuff disappeared. Like, no, all these artists from the 90s, all these labels gone. So there was a meeting about, you know, filling up prisons, and hip hop was going to help this happen. So this is where we at now. All these rappers getting murdered. The whole vibe is just different now. You know, and I don't think it's, you know, from my point of view, I can't blame the artists. I can't blame these youngsters, because that's how they know how to get into the business these days. But there was a reason why it started leaning towards that way. And us as the alcoholics, I'm the first one to say we should have changed our ways a long time ago. But, you know, the shift in the vibe of what was happening was just totally changed during that time until now, still happening. So
Kanye was right.
A lot of people are becoming aware of it now, or have been coming. I heard the Crazy Bone speaking on it. Someone spoke on it some years ago, and that's why I was a little more comfortable coming out talking about it myself. But when I saw that list, I left. And nobody understood it. They was like, let's bring hip hop back, man. We can do it. And I just kept telling everybody, it ain't gonna happen, bro. It ain't gonna happen. They're like, man, we can bring it back. Everybody doing this new type style. We can bring the, it ain't about us. They're not gonna play it. But I couldn't really explain why at the time, you know. But yeah, that's where we at now, you know. And I can just say their plan worked in a way.
You know what's deep about that? Hey, we up close now? What's up?
There we go.
Oh my God, I look so fat.
I scared myself.
Well, you know what? I've been eating. So I've been getting a little chunky in the face.
It's all good. You know, we still young. We still young at heart.
So. You know, chicks be shooting up their face to get a little plump in the face. So let me go on and give thanks.
There you go.
Well, give honor. Okay, so hello, everyone. I know we just tapped completely in. This is Brother J-Ro from the Alcoholics, who is such an honorable person, not just because of his lyrics, but because of his flavor, his swag, his youthful face. And you lived in Sweden. Oh, my God. How was that?
It was awesome, you know. It was a very life-changing experience, you know. I say in some ways it saved my life. It slowed me down a lot. It got me healthy, thinking a lot different. Just being able to travel around Europe real easy. You know, the longest flight from there is like 2 hours to the
end of
Spain somewhere.
Wow.
So you can get around real easy. I was in a lot of different countries, from Croatia to Denmark to Norway, Lithuania, like Paris, you know, it's everywhere, you know. And
did you rock over there, or did you kind of just put music on the back burner?
I was rocking. Okay. I was out there rocking. I put out an album.
Oh, dope.
The reason I went out there, because I hooked up with a label called Juju Records.
Oh,
and it was like the top hip hop label in Sweden. And they contacted me when we were doing a tour overseas, And after the tour was over, I stayed there for like 3 months. Swift and Tash came back to the States. I stayed out there.
He's like, I'm good.
Yeah, I had done that a couple of times before for maybe like a week or two. I was like, I'm staying. You know, I was staying like in Copenhagen was my favorite city, you know.
Man, I can't wait to travel.
And then when I was out there, I was like, I'm moving, you know, because I always had that itch to like, I want to stay in Europe. Every time we would go out there, I would want to stay. So I got the opportunity. The label was like, yeah, let's put this album together. And then I came home, got rid of everything. I mean, I'm
so dope.
I got rid of everything. I was giving away shoes that I had up and stuff that I never thought I would get rid of, you know. And I was like, I'm out. I just felt more free out there.
That's what they say. I wonder
I was free. You know, when you I was like, I can speak my mind. I can, you know, the one thing that really hit me when I was in Sweden, it was the first time I was ever called an American.
What'd you think of that?
I'm sitting in the room and one dude is like, yeah, he's the American.
And you're like
looking around, like, who is he talking about? I'm like, wait, he's talking about me. And then it would happen over and over. Like, yeah, you're American. You know what's up. I'm just like, wow, I ain't never been called an American. Ain't none of my family members ever been called an American. None of my ancestors ever been called an American. And that's what I am, you know? And so that just really gave me a whole new mind state of who I was and who we are as people and what this world is really about. And so I would go around Europe, and I tell you, I've been to a place like Macedonia.
Dope.
I've been to small towns in Poland, wow. Croatia. And you think we live in ghettos in California? Ain't nothing close to what I seen out there.
Yeah, for real ghettos. Like from the 40s, from the 1940s?
I'm talking about now.
Oh, the poverty.
Poverty. It's people living way worse than I ever could imagine. And I'm talking about white people.
As we call them,
yeah. What I'm talking about here. Mm-hmm. And so these things just changed my whole view of the world. Like, really. You know, I thought we had it the worst and lived in the worst areas in the world. You know, basically. Without, you know, I'm sure there's some third world countries.
They always make Africa the like highlight.
Africa, you got parts of South America, Asia, but mm-hmm. I'm talking about Europe.
Mm-hmm. You never hear about that.
Right. Poverty stricken. I'm talking about people outside around bonfires, goats walking down the road. I ain't gonna say street. Houses hand built. I've been to Africa also. I've seen that down there too. Mm-hmm. Just shanty towns. So it's a worldwide thing. And I think most of the world live like that, you know, but we get this facade out here that we living good. And there, you go across the street, it's the ghetto. It's ghetto out here is more of a mind state, in my opinion. It's something that's been placed in our minds. Yeah.
That's right.
To think a certain way.
It's not by accident.
Right. But other than that, on positive notes, I taught at a hip hop school for 6 years in Sweden.
Wow.
It was a year course where students could learn. They learn all the four elements, how to interact with all the four elements, We brought in guest teachers, like amazing writers, graph writers from New York, B-boys, B-girls, DJs, MCs, you know, from J.Ru to Damager to Wild Child to AZ to, you know, B-girls from Korea would come in and do like a week course. Donald D used to come. I used to have him come in and do the history lesson for 2 weeks every year before this class started. And he had like pictures and documents from the beginning in the Bronx and stuff like that.
That's dope. I'm glad to know something like that exists.
And this is from 2005. And I taught there for 6 years.
Incredible.
So
did you come back and forth at any point? Like, did you come to visit your family? Or you just
absolutely
stayed?
I used to come back at least once or twice a year.
Okay.
I was still doing shows with the Licks. We would do shows in United States and
that's
Europe.
So fun.
Australia still. So I was I've been through 8 passports, just put it that way.
Incredible.
I've been through 8 of them.
We talk about putting a book together, good brother, because my aunt lived in Belgium for like 6 or 7 years, and she used to always talk about the culture, you know, like the difference in growing up as a Black woman here and then being a Black woman in Belgium. And she talked about racism, you know, it's not like there isn't any racism over there.
Right.
But it's like, it's different or something, she would say. At least in Belgium.
Yeah, it's racism is just a natural thing, happens everywhere, you know.
It's deep.
Racism in Africa.
Right.
Everywhere, you know.
And then the whole notion of race is different. Like the term race is just even different.
Right.
Yeah,
because like they got them in Sweden. But I'll tell you what, Swedish people don't tolerate it. They're not tolerating racism.
So how do they not tolerate? What do they do?
I'm talking about, I'll tell you like this. There was an Arab kid who got attacked by some racists in the city I lived in Malmo. He got put in the hospital in a coma.
Wow. A
few days later, that whole city was out on the street marching. I'm talking about everybody with signs, everything. They're not having it. You know, they think that's old, barbaric, not Nazi. Nobody like that really out there. But you still have people that's still down with that. They, you know, living out in the countryside and stuff like that. They're not loud about it.
Yeah. But there's no tolerance. That's dope. That's good to know.
That was something else that hit me. Like, wow, this is, I never seen nothing like this in the United States. If something happened to a Black kid, all the Black people come out in March, right? Out there, everybody came out. It was like, nah, this ain't happening in our city.
Wow. Wait a minute. So what did you think when you came back? What was different? Oh, but you have been coming back and forth.
Yeah, I was coming, but it would hit me every time. I'm like, wow, this is where I grew up. You know, this is, and I would see people going through certain things and still living the life. And, you know, I always say, like, because people over there would ask me, what is L.A. like? And I would tell them it's the best of the best and the worst of the worst. Okay. And one on the same street, I could be sitting in my car that's barely running and a dude pull up to me in a Ferrari, same age as me, look just like me, everything. That's LA right there in a nutshell.
That is real. You know, I went to Hollywood High and I had just moved to LA like the year before from Chicago. And my mother's a hippie. So I lived everywhere. Okay. But we moved to LA. She knew I wanted to move to California and she was tired of the winters. So we moved. My brothers and I. And we were kind of, you know, financially challenged when we moved here. And the next year, I'm kicking it with like Alyssa Milano and Kidada Jones and like, you know what I mean? Like Corey Feldman, Corey Haim, all these kids, they loved my goofy self. You know what I mean? But just the year before, I was so just, I'm still, you know, I was still, you know, financially challenged. But the
we're in the same high school with these, them. Yeah,
yeah, they didn't care. Like, they didn't care about that at all. So it was just crazy.
You don't get that dynamic really nowhere else.
Yeah, yeah. Like I'm like sitting with some of the richest kids in the world, and I live down at the Alexandria Hotel. Like, yeah, that was wild. But yeah, I appreciate. You know, they say when you travel, it's like you grow exponentially. Like, you know, it's nothing like living other places and traveling, because you get to talk and smell and eat the food, you know, of a different space, you know?
Yeah, and the thing is, like, Europeans, they travel. They don't like to travel. Like, say if someone in France, they don't like to travel to Germany. They want to go to America or Australia or Thailand or something. They go travel. So, you know, most people out there have that different mind state already. They know what the world is about. But us here, we just go to New York or Miami or go down south, visit our family. We don't really get out of this country. Which is, you know, I can't really blame nobody because this is a huge country. You could spend your life traveling around America and not see the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard.
Some people ain't ever been to Pasadena, brother.
I always used to tell people, man, because they think we live in California. We spending all kind of time at the beach. Mm. I'd be like, I know people ain't probably been to the beach once in their life.
Maybe twice, or, maybe.
Yeah, maybe twice or maybe once every few years or something like that. Or we just, you know, we're enclosed. And you know, some, like I said, some people travel, but they don't really get out of the country because that's like kind of like, if you leave the country, that's kind of like, wow, you went to London. Whoa, that's like amazing.
That is amazing, brother. That's amazing.
But people overseas, they travel like it's nothing. I know like people, they would have this saying out there. Like I'm talking about young people like 22, 23 years old. They're like, I'm eating spaghetti and ketchup for a couple months. Why? Because they saving up money to go to Thailand for a month. You know what I mean? They come home, they work, they save up some money. Now they going to Nairobi. Yeah, there you go. They go down to Africa or something.
That's dope. I met this cool sister when I was in Atlanta, and she said a whole bunch of folks just moved to Tanzania. Like, yeah, that's what we doing. We moving to Tanzania. And they moved to Tanzania. They would just take, like, she said she would come back to America maybe every 6 months and get like barrels of food. That's why she was in Atlanta at this particular store I was at. She was buying like barrels of like her favorite, you know, American whatever.
Right.
And she said they had a whole compound.
Mm-hmm.
And like, the money spread so much that they could afford security. Like she said, out there they're considered not rich, but like hey, you know,
they rich.
They had enough to have security. They had armed security at all times. And there was just like maybe 8 to 10 black folk, just like we moving to Tanzania, we chilling.
Yeah. I mean, I've been to Cameroon and, I haven't been all over Africa, but just going to Cameroon was like, just like open my eyes once again, you know, like, first, I noticed there's a lot of money in Africa. It's like a lot of resources. You see different country flags down there doing their thing. But I was loving it. Like I got on the plane, the pilot, the flight attendants was all black people. Land, everyone was black people everywhere, man. It was like wow, you know.
Now, do you speak different languages, or did you get away with just speaking English in these places?
No, I speak Swedish. I learned how to speak Swedish. I'm in Sweden. I'm terrible here. I speak really good Swedish, but they speak really good English. So it's hard for Americans to learn Swedish there because everybody wants to speak English with you.
Okay.
So they learn in school how to speak English.
That's dope.
My daughter, 17 years old there, who speaks 5 languages.
Your daughter?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So, my stepfather's from Somalia. He spoke 9 languages. But that would make sense because, like, in Somalia, you know, they speak, of course, Arabic. Mm-hmm. And then he spoke his local family language. Then he spoke English. He spoke French, spoke Italian, German. I can't even remember the other languages he spoke. But a lot of people from other countries tend to speak multiple languages because I figure, you know how America has Ohio and Kentucky and all that next to each other? They're right next to each other, you know?
Right. Exactly. Right next to each other.
You know?
So they learn, you know, they learn a little bit of a lot of different languages, but in school they learn even more. And everyone has to really learn English. I call it the money language.
I've heard that before.
If a Korean and a Mexican is doing business, they speak in English to each other, trust me.
Now, when you went to Cameroon, did you fit in? Because from what I heard, they say my family found out they're from Cameroon, and they say they're all about the cheekbones and the puppy dog eyes. You know anything about that? They say Cameroonians have like chunky cheeks and puppy dog eyes. I know that's a whole country we're talking about, but
the thing is, you got about 100 tribes in each country in Africa, you know? So that's kind of hard to say. Like, a lot of people would ask me, because there's a lot of Africans in Sweden. So they would be like, where are you from? I'd be like, I'm from California. They like, no, what part of Africa? I don't know. They be like, you don't know. Like, what? They was so shocked. And that I got this over and over and over. You don't know where you from in Africa? Like, no. Then some of them would start telling me, you look like you're from Cameroon. You look like you're from Ivory Coast.
Yes.
No, he's from Kenya, like, or something. They swear Puff Daddy is Somalian, I'm telling you. All the Somalians think Puffy is Somali. They like, no, he's Somalian, like, for real.
That beautiful skin. He's got
he's dark skin with curly hair.
He's got skin tone. Yeah, he does. My stepfather had that soft, soft texture hair and that colored skin like that.
Right. But some of them would tell me they can tell by this right here. They can tell because a lot of us don't have this definite line that between our palm and our color here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you see how yours is just smooth. I barely have it, but you see a lot of Africans, they have a definite,
it's true,
yeah, so they could tell when I'm walking down the street, they think I'm mulatto. They would say, you mulatto. I'm like, no, my mom and my dad is black, but I'm American, you know. We all mix, we mix with Native Indian, all type of stuff. So
bro,
I don't know, bro. I would just tell them I don't know, you know. I can only go so far back. And but yeah, you know, they don't really know. Our history is not taught around the world. It's barely taught here, you know. Imagine somebody in Sweden, they have no clue of what our lineage is like.
You know? And we still learning. I don't know if you had a chance to see what Coolio was talking about in our interview, but he had been listening and watching this guy named Dane Calloway. So I had started watching and listening to Dan Calloway and others. And of course, you know, I do have a degree from Cal State Long Beach in Black Studies.
Congrats.
You know. So I learned, though, they always label us as Black, right? And then I remember studying with some Moorish brothers. I've taken time to study with different, you know, groups of family. I've done with the 5 percenters, the Moorish, the Israelites. I'm Church of God in Christ. And then my mother was Buddhist, and I've been Catholic too, child. But most of us are learning now. Check it. There's this book called Sugar Changed the World. Okay. And I was building with my 10th graders with this, mm-hmm. right? It said that only 4% of the slave ships, so-called, that came to America. Only 4%. Absolutely. The other 96% went to the islands in Central and South America.
Absolutely.
Most Black people, we didn't know that. I didn't know that growing up. You know, yeah. I mean, we always generically heard somebody go, I'm Indian, and I didn't. And we'd always say, they just don't want to be Black. Talk about the Indian. But really and truly.
Really, telling the truth.
Everybody can tell you their great grandmothers was Indian. I don't know about your family, but in my family, it's always, oh, grandma's grandma was pure Indian. You know, I always hear that.
Absolutely. I'm Choctaw myself, from Mississippi area. And my grandfather was Gullah Geechee from South Carolina Islands, the islands off of South Carolina. They still barely speak English over there.
We talked about the Gullah family back in the day, too, because that's a language. A lot of people don't even know that the family has their own language, you know, and how that came about.
Listen to Lady Marmalade. They kicking it on that song, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They kicking it. They you know. But, you know, they you can go back in history and read about the copper color people. They came here and they labeled, the first called us Americans. And that's why I can really take pride in that name when somebody called me an American.
Ain't that something?
Americans were copper colored people. That's what they called the Blacks that was here already.
Ain't that something?
And you had different tribes, you know, you had these you know, natives you see in the movies, yeah, in different areas, but you had around the Gulf of Mexico, down to Florida, New Orleans area. That's, you know, you see these nations in the Mardi Gras, they wearing all the Indian stuff. That was the only time they were allowed to wear their feathers and their colors, because Indians would get, you know, enslaved and slaughtered just the same as anyone else. So, you know, it paid off for some of them to say they was Black. They wasn't Indian. I ain't Indian, I'm Black. Okay, you're gonna be a slave then. We got you. Mm. You was Indian, they straight kill you.
Wow.
Stopped us from using drums, all that type of stuff.
And our different languages
gone.
You know what? Do you know who Dr. B is? Dr. B? Dr. B. Sirius. He's an herbalist, and more than that, he's all kinds of everything. But he used to speak a lot at The Good Life, and I just watched him recently on YouTube, and he was talking about how, have you ever thought about this? He says hip hop has a 4-4 beat. Right, just like classical music used to play on a 4-4 beat, 1, 2, 3, 4. He says that's like a marching band, that's like war. Basically, he was saying that's war drums, right? And he was saying perhaps maybe there was some connection between the violence, so-called, in rap music and the 4-4 drum. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Drums very powerful. That's why they banned us from using them, because drums are communication. You can play melodies and stuff with other instruments, but percussion instruments are for communication purposes. And that's what they were used for before we had like commercial music and all of this. And I would urge anyone, I'm gonna even write it right here. It's a movie called Rumble. Rumble.
Trying to see if I can, how I can put it on the screen. Oh yeah, here, type it in and then let me see if I can do it. Rumble, it's a movie.
I think it's called The Indians Who Changed the World. I'm gonna write it right here.
Okay.
This will change your whole perception of American music and music in general.
Like, why did they get so mad because the brother pumped that little movie up on his...
This movie will change perception. And it tripped me out because there's a movie about music.
Yeah, press enter. You put it in private chat, I think. Rumble, the Indians who changed the world.
Okay, my bad.
It's all good. Wait, no.
Oh, I wasn't even checking out the comments here.
Oh, okay. Rumble, the Indians who changed the world. And what's funny is when I lived in Wisconsin, they used to chase us home from school. They didn't even like black folks.
Yeah, I mean, it's tribal though, you know, it's very tribal. So that's very natural for something like that to happen.
Interesting.
Okay. Thank you for writing that there.
Mm-hmm.
So when I watched this movie, it just changed my perception of music, but it also gives a history lesson of who we are in this country. And that surprised me because you got all these artists from Howlin' Wolf to Chuck Berry to who else is in the movie? A lot of people is mentioned or that are in the movie, and when their name comes up, it tells you what tribe they're from.
Wow.
Michael Jackson was Choctaw. Jimi Hendrix, Choctaw. You know how Jimi Hendrix used to wear the, he knew. His grandmother used to tell him. You know, and he was very proud of his heritage, and he wore the fringes, and you know that he always had something on, feathers and things like that. And if you go and look now, you'll notice it real loud, you know. But they talk about this in this movie, and I think anyone who's in music should watch this movie, like for real. It's very it's life changing,
informative.
Is very informative and for everyone, because it lets you know that we all created this.
That's right.
What is called rock music or popular music, we all had a part in it. It didn't just really start from the blues. It didn't just start from you know, down home blues and this and that, but that it went back. That was part of it, but it goes before that. Where did the down home blues come from? So I'm gonna just put it in perspective real quick, and we can change subjects.
Oh, that's dope.
But just imagine how these dudes used to sing. They used to sing like,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
They singing the melodies of old Native Indian songs, but putting words to it. Putting English words to it. And when that, there was a lady who chants in Native, and she listened to this old Robert Johnson record, and she was like, I know this melody. This is one of the ancient melodies like that every Native knows. How did he know this? Because he was Native.
Mm.
But yeah, it's a lot of knowledge in that movie.
Hella deep.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The whole vibe, and then you start seeing a lot of the artists that we know and love from those times were from. Some of them lived in reservations, you know, we didn't even know they were natives.
Right.
Yep, for sure.
Now, with the ones that they, okay, so I've been hearing this, especially since, rest in peace, Coolio passed, I've been hearing it more and more. So, and my grandma and my mother used to tell me about these Africans long, like thousands of years ago. There's this wind that goes directly like from West Africa that used to blow them all the way just right to Mexico. Basically, they didn't have to do nothing but stand on the boat like, and they was here. And they've proven that with these Olmec heads. Have you ever seen the Olmec heads in Mexico?
Absolutely.
They're gigantic heads, y'all. And they have noses just like my Uncle Jesse, rest in peace. You know, like mine. And they say that they made those in the images of the brothers who used to come visit them. And they also have the gold tips from the spears that they had back then. And the name of that particular type of gold is called guanine, which is only found in Ghana, you know, but it's over in Mexico, right? So that's how they were saying they had proof that they definitely used to interchange and hang out all the time.
Yeah, it's only logical, you know. It's not that far. South America and Africa are not that far from each other,
you know. But they don't.
There's islands in between, you know.
They're trying to ban us from teaching any of this type of information to students.
Mm-hmm.
A big thing that's happening right now is that at my son's elementary school and my son's middle school, a lot of the Latino family is getting a kick out of calling the black kids nigga with the hard R. That's like an issue right now. So we've had to kind of, as parents and as teachers, well, I'm not addressing it. The principal and assistant principals are addressing it. But just the fact that that's thought to be something funny or something to play with, you know what I mean? That's why I take time to, in my classes, definitely teach that history about how we're all connected.
Right.
We're all connected, man. You don't think you're not us. You know, just like I said on the podcast, you make arroz con pollo, I make fried chicken.
Right.
But same difference.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, that was one reason why I mentioned this movie, because it really just shows how we all connected.
And I might have to play it on a podcast and then like do like a live discussion on that. That sounds very
absolutely dope. Absolutely.
That sounds dope. You know,
it's people from every genre, rock, rap, blues, everything on in it, and everyone can appreciate it, because then you like all these people are connected.
Right.
You know, they would say all the Apaches are the best drummers.
Mm.
They had this mind state that was just drum. All the rockers, they all the baddest drummers in rock music were Apaches.
Mm.
So, but it, you know, it's a lot more that I'm sure we don't know, but.
That's amazing.
You get something going.
And you got me thinking about that song. Hey yo, hey yo, hey yo, hey yo. Eddie Riley. Hey yo, hey yo, hey yo, hey yo.
Right. I mean, it's all the rhythms ain't no new rhythm. You know, ain't no new note, rhythm, nothing. They all come from somewhere, you know.
That's very, and you know what? I've always thought of you and E. Swift, actually, and Tash, but you have always had like a older spirit energy on you. Did you hang out with old people a lot?
Yeah.
Like, you know, wise is what I'm trying to say. Like, you have like wisdoms. Not saying you always necessarily applied them.
I definitely didn't.
But that's what getting, you know, the luxury, the beauty of getting older is about. You have a chance to grow into your wisdom, you know. But you always had that old man energy. Quit playing.
Yeah, I had that energy. Like you said, I didn't always apply it, but I grew up, you know, in the family system, in the AME church, you know, all the elders in the church. It was like big family, you know, so, and, you know, just growing up in a black neighborhood, you know, people that's 90, you know, people that's 9, you know.
That's
what I mean?
Right. That's how it used to be.
Yeah.
Trying to really shake that off and shake that up now.
Right. So
that's missing.
You learn things from older people. They would give you advice, tell you things, what you should be doing, what you shouldn't be doing. And, you know, that's just what I learned from, you know. Mm-hmm. And thank God, you know, I got that kind of education, you know, because it guided me, like you said, that wind guided people on the ocean. It guided me through life, you know. Certain things I wouldn't think twice. I would think twice about, like, I don't want to upset my family or my elders by doing something like this, even though I have the urge to do it or something. But it would, you know, just make me go in a different direction, even if it was a little bit, you know. But yes, you know, it's just a lot of life experiences that, you know, make you a certain way. And like you said, as a kid, I was around like a lot of, I was raised by a lot of people, put it that way. My mom's single mom, don't take nothing from her. She did everything for her only son, her only child, you know. So I was just like, you know, mom's was there always. But I was, you know, raised by a lot of people, a lot of good people, you know. Mm. Thank God for that, you know. And yes. I don't know how much time we got, but I want to give a
have all the time in the world. You know, I've done 4-hour podcasts with Voodoo, 4 hours with 2000 Crows. I did a 4-hour one with, if I'm not saying you're going to do that because you have such a, you know, you know, your baby and your wife.
Yeah, I was going to give a shout out to my wife.
Oh, we're getting there.
My baby, you know.
Absolutely gorgeous. Oh my gosh.
That's the life now. Sophia, little Mila.
How'd you acquire that gorgeous baby doll lady? She's so pretty.
Man, you know, it's we have a very very great story. You know, we became friends. She kind of popped up on the scene in LA, and I had came back. And this is how God works, you know, because I had no intention of ever, ever living back in California, United States, nothing like that. No intention. So I came back, and by certain circumstances, I kind of got stuck where I couldn't go back at a certain time. I had to stay in California, and we met at this time, and we just became really good friends. She was learning how to DJ. We was doing the thing down there in Hollywood at the Delicious Pizza. Chris the Glove and, you know, some other great people down there. So we was doing that, and we just started hanging out like, oh yeah, I'm gonna come out there. We're gonna go here. We're gonna go do this. Like, just hanging out, you know. And
are you serious? I mean,
and we had this thing like, we are friends. Like, people would be like, y'all together? Like, no way. We had many conversations about it. Like, we can never be in no relationship together, none of that. She had something going on, I had something going on. It wasn't by no means.
So pretty. You were never just like,
even in my head, I was just like, that ain't gonna work. It ain't gonna work, you know, for real. It just won't work. I know myself, she's a certain way, ain't gonna work. So one thing led to another, and we just both kind of like, hey, you know what? What else we gonna do? We best friends now. Who gonna accept that? If we in a relationship with somebody else, who's gonna accept that? We was already planning after this COVID thing. I have to tell you, she introduced me to the Orthodox Christian faith.
Okay.
First of all, which is the original Christian religion. And a lot of, if you know a lot of Russians, a lot of Greeks are Orthodox, a lot of Ethiopians.
Mm-hmm. Coptic, right?
Coptic is Orthodox, mm-hmm. right? So this is the religion where Jesus told Paul and them go out and spread this around the world. It have not changed to this day. Nothing has changed. So I came out here to, in Arizona, they have a monastery. It's about 23 acres, beautiful land that a Greek priest came, a monk, he came in from Greece, and he built 21 monasteries in the United States, but he ended up in the Arizona one. So she used to come and she asked me one time, do you want to go with me? I'm like, I don't really know much about Orthodox, but I didn't really see no black people. So I was like, am I allowed to go? Like, she's like, well, I'm going to call them and tell them we can stay there a few days. So you stay there with the monks, you help them out, you go to the service at 1:30 in the morning, you know, ain't no TVs, ain't even no mirrors in the bathrooms, nothing. You just living in the whole, the whole energy there is just like, and at that moment I was like, cause I had, like you, I have been Catholic. I grew up in the AME. My father's Catholic, my mom's AME Methodist. So I grew up in the black church, grew up in Catholic. Mm-hmm. When I got like 17, 18, I was just like, I don't know. You know, something ain't right and And I think I'm better off just going out there and living, believing in God and
being a good person.
So when I got there, I was like, this is it. This is what I've been like looking for and not even knowing. You know, this is the truth. This is the original. This is where it all started. You know, and they urge you to get some books. So to this day, I've read books, a stack of books, but I bought a few books. I started learning about it, the religion and the ways of the saints and things like this. And so changed my life. She changed my life by taking me there. You know, so it was all a plan, God's plan for
That's
sure.
That's right, I see.
So then the story started making sense. When the way I met her, the way we became friends, everything. And at one point I was having some problems. You know, I was like, you know, where I'm living at is not cool. And I'm going through this. I can't go back to Sweden. She looked me in my eye and said, this is not you. And I'm telling you, it was like a wind hit me and I almost fell. And at that moment, it felt like God spoke through her. You know, I don't tell this story much often, but I want it to be known just
beautiful
so people can hear it. And at that moment, I was just like, whatever I can do, I understand that God put this person in my life for some reason. And that's when we just became best friends. Cause I was like, anything, I would make it happen. I would do it, whatever. We good. You know what I'm saying? Whatever you need, whatever you want to do, I'll help you. Cause you just put me in a whole different frame of thinking of my spirit. And this is before we went to the monastery. So then we go to the monastery, and that's what I'm saying. All this made sense to me.
Of all the women.
Right? Yeah, all the women in the world and all of this, you know, it was just like
her beliefs that, you know, she had a spiritual base.
That's what caught me at first, because I see her. She's like you say, she's a beautiful girl. She loved hip hop. I didn't even think it was nothing close to this, you know. Then I went to her house, I saw her. You know, Orthodox have icons of different saints and Jesus, you know, And I was just like, wow, this is interesting. First, I just thought it was interesting. Like, okay, maybe that's just what Russian people do. They just have this set up in their house, you know. Mm-hmm. But then I started learning a lot of more about, you know, these churches in Russia with the onion shape. Dome.
Yes.
That's all Orthodox. You know, they all, the whole their country.
Interesting. Orthodox. I thought they were some were Muslim, but I guess.
I mean, there's some Muslim, but the generally in Russia is Orthodox.
And that's what
communism was all about, to stop. The first thing they did was burn down a lot of the monasteries and churches. They killed a lot of the priests and bishops. That was the first thing they had to do. Wow. And they banned religion. They banned Orthodox religion. The Christians that were getting thrown to the lions, they were all Orthodox.
Literally?
Yes.
How long ago was that? Like, were we talking about 1,000 years? Oh, we're talking about the
1400s,
the 1900s during World War I?
No, I'm talking about like in the 8th century.
Oh, okay.
8th, 9th century when they started killing Christians. So before that, it was spreading throughout the world. You heard of Emperor Constantine?
Course,
he's the one who made Christianity the official religion of Rome. Mm-hmm. And that was Orthodox, the Orthodox religion. He had a vision, so he made it, you know, the official from paganism to Orthodox. Mm-hmm. Christian. And like I said, and this was the 3rd century. We're talking about, or the 4th century, we're talking about year 355, you know. So just before that, you had Paul and Peter going out to these different countries. Matthew went to Africa. They were, you know, all over. Some apostle went to India, and you can still find their bodies in some churches around the world.
Wow.
So people doubt like this happened, you know, it's there. The history is there, you know.
So then
I'm named after James, Jesus' brother.
Wow.
He was the first bishop of the Orthodox faith.
People don't think of Jesus having siblings and things. James.
Yeah.
So, wait a minute. I've heard people say there was no letter J until the year 1400. So was
okay. So the thing is, I'm speaking English now. Okay. See, that people always want to find something like, oh, there was no letter J. Or
we've heard that before, right?
Yeah, of course. Well, I'm speaking English. Of course, his name wasn't James.
My son doesn't care that it's live. He just doesn't care.
His name wasn't, as we say, James now. They spoke Aramaic. They spoke Greek. They spoke different languages than we speak now. But today, that name has turned to James. What, you know, I don't know the correct pronunciation or what it was then. Because like in French, James is Jacques.
Oh, yeah.
You would think that's Jack or something, right?
Right.
Is Jacques. It don't sound nothing like James.
That's right.
So that's today.
That's a good point.
So people, you know, that will always try to throw, it's like they say, a monkey wrench in the system, you know.
I also wanted to just throw a side note. Thank you for sending those masks. Look, during the corona, brother sent us masks. My husband was like, oh, we don't have any masks. You sent us. You sent us those lovely masks, and I still have like one of them.
Wow.
I just wanted to, you know, like a keepsake. I was like, I want to keep something.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I was, wow, you just reminded me of that. But, yeah, I work with a company out in California that mass produces stuff. They get stuff from China and they have shiploads of them. So I went and picked some up and, you know, got them to my people, man. Like whoever needed them, you know.
And of course, he was like, "I need some K95s."
Yep.
We went through that whole process, man. That was so. Y'all got married during the Corona situation, or right before?
I mean, are we out of it yet? I don't know. But we got married. We just had our first anniversary in October 10th.
Congratulations.
So it wasn't during like no shutdown or nothing, no. But yeah. Cause yeah. We both caught it when she was still pregnant. So.
Oh my gosh.
And
how scary is that? Yeah, we had it last December, but then we had it like the year before too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really bad at all. She had it a little worse because her immune system was a little, she had a little baby in her, but everything was good. She's healthy, baby healthy. We made it through, you know.
So. Yes, she did.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes, congratulations. It's a beautiful thing. You've lived multiple lives. You lived quite a few different lives, apparently.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I don't have much time left.
That's fine. Thank you.
We can go on for hours.
I know, right?
But
I just wanted people to see you, hear you talk. I know we didn't talk much about music per se.
Right, right.
But hey, but that's the whole thing. I want people to know who the people are behind the thing. And you know, you had some very interesting information. So. But we can talk a little about the music. I mean, most people who are clicking in already know who you are and know your history. And I'll add some things when I do post-production. But you are just, thank you. We want to see who the people are behind the music. You know, who are you? You know?
Yeah, thanks for having this platform. And, you know, if you need my help getting some other artists or whatever on.
I want to talk to King T.
Keep it going. Yeah. Have him on tomorrow.
I have one story about King T, just one. Okay, just real quick. When we were flying down, it wasn't Jack the Rapper. It was something like that, the Gavin. You remember the Gavin Awards? Or
yeah,
I don't
absolutely.
Know.
Yeah, Gavin.
I went with Coolio. Coolio invited me. Mm-hmm. And it was me, King T, Raz Kaz, Paul Stewart, and Billy Boy and his manager, D-Dog.
Okay.
And I flew down to Louisiana, to New Orleans. That was my first time going to New Orleans.
Okay, we was down there. I was with. I have a story about Raz Kaz at that time. But go ahead.
It was 95, so yeah, everybody and their mama was there.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
That was like legendary. I was hanging out with ODB. I was on the dance floor, and he came dancing with me and brought me up on, you know, behind whatever with the whole Wu Tang. Okay,
yeah.
And I'm listening to them talk, and then. I'm on stage, like, I don't know what I'm thinking. And I see Coolio and everybody like, come on, get off the stage. Get off the stage. But anyway, that's another story for another day. But anyways, thank you so much. And bless you and bless your family and everything and all of that. And come back another time. Maybe I can get you, E-Swift, and Taj on here. That'd be great.
Yeah, yeah. And send my regards, my love to Dino, to Volume 10. Yeah. You know,
his album is awesome. It's not even hip hop. It's kind of hip hop, but it's not. It's like beyond. It's like something else.
Amazing.
Check it out. He's going as Dean Hawkins. So there we go.
There you go. That we all evolve and keep doing our thing, and you know, tell him to keep doing it. You know,
Thank you.
He's a magical spark in this world. And
that's
God
right.
God bless you guys and
thank you. Thank you.
Your union and stay strong and keep God first, you know.
Thank you. It's a beautiful story. And thank you. All right. Hey, okay. So we had the legendary J Row up in here. Beautiful stories. Beautiful stories. You are a very deep man. It would be great to talk to you guys at another point. All right. Well, that's Chit Chat Podcast. And thank you. All right, y'all.
Peace.
Whoa. Wait, I'm back. Well, that was J-Roll, y'all. I'm really thankful that the brother took time, you know, because he really is a griot. He's like a living legend, a living artist that has made a profound effect on rap music, you know what I mean? Especially in the 90s. Got to check out his whole roster. Did you guys have any questions or anything you wanted to say, ask? I said questions and ask the same thing in it. But yeah, I'm loving this color, man. This is new. It's hot. I didn't really want this color. She didn't mean to do it this color, but I'm working it. What's up, Chrissy A? Chrissy A, is anybody else watching tonight? I really appreciate you guys tuning in. I think I'm going to just probably do some post-production and add on some stuff to this, but it's live. I'm not going to get rid of this live one. That's it though. That's the end of this Chit Chat Podcast. Unless you guys had something else you wanted to add or ask. All right. On that note, this is the Thamico Show. Oh yeah. Please click like on the thing down there, please. Because you know, when you don't click like, nobody gets to see the show really. But when you click like, it does something to the algorithms and it makes it keep on, you know, keeping on. All right. Thank you. Peace.